Blog Talk Radio.
And now a brief message from our sponsor. Reality Books presents Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. The author is Marshall Washington Cabinus Abui, the senior great-grandson of Booker T. Washington. Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution, a message that will change America. Buy your copy today. $20 is all it costs, plus $5 postage and handling. To order your copy of the book written by the great-grandson of Booker T. Washington, Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution, send a text message. Include your full name and how many books you would like to purchase. Send to area code 706-399-5006. Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. A message that will change America. Send your text message, including your full name and how many books you would like to purchase, to area code 706-399-5006. Now a brief word from our sponsor, Reality Books, publisher of Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. A short extract from the book, Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. God will not change the condition of a people until they change what is in themselves. In other words, until they change their way of thinking. Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution is designed to help African Americans and other ethnicities change their way of thinking. This is a book that will change America, and it is on sale for only $20 plus $5 postage and handling. You can order your book now by sending a text message to area code 706-399-5006. Please put your name and the number of books that you would like to order, and you will be contacted to arrange payment information so that the book can be mailed to you immediately. So please go ahead and don't hesitate. Order your copy today. Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution, published by Reality Books. The author of this book is the great-grandson, the senior great-grandson of Booker T. Washington, the founder of the famous Tuskegee Institute in Alabama, now known as Tuskegee University. The great-grandson of Booker T. Washington is inviting you to order his book. Send a text to area code 706 399 5006. The book is only $20 plus $5 postage and handling. Order your copy today. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, now you should be fine. Miss Bianca, are you able to hear me?
Yeah,
okay.
I hear you.
Okay, fine. Well, I'm going to use that other mic at another time because apparently I wasn't going out on it. I don't know what's going on, but we're back to our old school way of using our phone mic, and that's fine as long as you can hear me. Well, this evening, we may not go past 9 o'clock. It all depends, but we do have somewhat of a what I would call a complex topic this evening. Normally, I try to stick with issues that specifically pertain to the African-American community because that's what my primary interest is in when it comes to our show and discussing this because I call it an African-American family room forum, meaning we're gathered together to talk about issues concerning the African-American community or African-American family. But as I look at the news, especially in the last few months, actually, I've become increasingly concerned about the condition of America in terms of our national character. Now, mind you, I grew up in Alabama during the days of real serious black repression. Segregation was the law of the South, and it was something that we live with as an everyday reality if we were black people or even the white people. We could not eat in the same restaurants at the same tables, couldn't ride together on the buses sitting next to each other. In fact, the black folks had to sit in the back of the bus. And when we went to the store, the shop, we couldn't eat at the lunch counters. Most of us, 99% of us could not vote if we were of voting age. We couldn't even get registered to vote. We even had to use separate facilities at the bus station. Normally, the facilities that we had were either take out from a window where we had to eat outside or a small, dingy room, very, very different from the nice, well-lit air-conditioned, if it was at the point in time where air conditioning was there, air conditioned room, nice restaurant, and that's where the white people ate. And even the water fountains were different. The white folks had the cool water fountain, electric water fountain that had nice cool water. And I know that because I used to sneak and drink out of the white folks' water fountain. And because I was a child and maybe because I was fair-skinned, they didn't bother me. But the black folks had a water fountain that always had warm water, no matter what time of year it was. The white folks' water was cool, whether it was summer or spring, winter or fall. Black folks' water was always warm, tepid. But you did what you had to do to survive. But then some things happened. The boycott in Montgomery changed the rule in Montgomery where white folks could not make us go to the back of the bus. In fact, I'll tell you something. What had happened was that we'd have to pay our money in the front, go up the little stairs to the front where the bus driver was. It was a machine there where you drop your money in there, and then you had to get off the bus, even if it was raining. Cats and dogs, as they say, it could be storming. You had to get back out in the weather, walk all the way to the back of the bus and get on the bus. That was segregation. But the character of America, even though we had those repressive laws working to keep us down, we always believed, and I think even the white folks believed that one day that black folks should have more freedom. And so times changed. We got more freedom. The civil rights laws made it possible for us to have more freedom. And the character of America seemed always to be pretty well intact. We had Democrats, Republicans. We had black and white issues to a certain extent. But if you have your mic on and you have noise in the background, could you mute your mic wherever you are so we won't have the background noise coming through? Could you check and make sure if you got some noise in the background, could you mute your mic? I still hear music and the noise of talking in the background like a TV's on. Thank you. If you mute your mic, I appreciate you. But, yeah, my point is that the character of America seems to be challenged right now. The character of America seems to be challenged right now. So the topic to start off with, and we can move away from it, but the topic to begin with is America losing its character that was hypocritically envisioned? Because even though the vision was put on paper and it was promoted and it was published and every school child learned part of the Declaration of Independence that established the initial founding fathers' idea that, as Thomas Jefferson said famously, we hold these truths to be self-evident. I mean, you can see it's evident that all men, all people are created equal. They are endowed by their creator with certain unalienable. I mean, you can't change this. You can't repudiate. You can't deny this. Rights. And that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And this is what made America special, because all countries didn't have this type of vision for their people. But America did. And even though we who were African Americans in the South and other places weren't getting the full benefit of this, we had the right, we believed, and we fought for that right to have life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And it was part of the gospel of America. This was who we were. And yet now it seems like something has damaged that. And so the question is, are we losing that character? Well, we're going to begin this evening, as we always do, by turning the show over to our co-host to let Ms. Bianchi begin with his commentary. So, Ms. Bianchi, what do you think? What are your thoughts on this?
Well, I do think that is true, because I have lived the other side. Now, of course, you made mention of some segregation that you experienced down in the South. And of course, I came up in the North. I didn't experience that. But if you look at the basic cultural tradition and the tenets that we came up under as a child and a family. Now, it wasn't all the necessary the cases of the time, but it was a lot. And we can see you don't have that today. When America was great, I don't know about down where you were, we used to have Christmas carols that would come along in the neighborhood and stand in front of your house and sing Christmas songs. And we would bring them out hot chocolate and cookies. We would be expecting them because they came every year. But you can't have that nowadays for risk of your life. Now, in some neighborhoods you can, of course, but it went on in ours. So things have changed. And I think it's a lot of degradation. You see sex is exploited all over the place, even much so to younger eyes and ears than what it was then. You see a lack of respect for authority, starting in the home, going to the schools for sure. Then it plays out in the public. So I would have to, on your question, I think that what I witness and see is true.
Okay, well, Ms. Bianchi, thank you for opening up with that comment. I grew up in the South, lived a few of those days, but I was glad to see them come to an end, because I very vividly remember not only did bus so forth, but I will always remember when I got my first job away from home, working in a town not too far from where I live, maybe about a 6-hour drive, though, from where I lived. I was born and raised around Alabama in the little town called Tuskegee. And Huntsville, Alabama, as you may know or may not know, it's really a big place where the rocket industry has a foothold. They have the Redstone Army Base there, which is where they have the soldiers trained to go to the field with these high-powered rockets, mobile rockets. And they have the Warner Braun Space Center. You know, Warner Braun was a German who was one of the originators, one of the scientists that helped to develop the long-range missiles. And so they have this large community of top scientists and technicians in the rocket industry, missile industry there. Well, I went to Huntsville as a 15-year-old to get a job. It was just a summer job painting the inside of a private school and doing some other construction-type work. So I was renting a room from African Americans, an older couple, and I preferred to eat at restaurants down on the strip in the black community. They call it the strip. It's just a little, maybe about eight stores on it. It's kind of like not really a strip mall, but it was down in the black neighborhood. And there was a restaurant not too far from there across the tracks, as they say, but it wasn't really across the railroad tracks. It was just a couple streets over in the white section. And they had a nice restaurant over there. And one evening from work, coming from work, I passed by there and it looked cozy inside. It was summertime, so, you know, but it just looked nice and cool inside. And I went inside. Well, I ain't too far because I opened the door. And the waitress saw me when I opened the door. And she said, I'm sorry, you can't come in here. We don't serve Negroes in here. And I wasn't surprised because I knew the rules of segregation, but I just said, well, this is further up north in Alabama, up in Huntsville, as close to the Tennessee line, up further north than where I lived in Alabama. So I thought maybe it was a little more flexible up there, but she said, no, you can't come here. We don't serve Negroes. She said, but she was a nice lady, though. She said, but you can go around the back, and I'll tell the cook to serve you back there. Well, that was an interesting place because the front of the building looked real nice and up to date, and you know what I was thinking, not really modern, but maybe sort of modern. But when I went around the back, it looked like an old time shack in the back. It was really something to change. And they had these wooden steps. You know, I had to go up the steps and knock on the back door. And I'll never forget this older black woman, really nice. She opened the door because the waitress already told her I was coming. She said, come on in. And she had a teenage helper. I don't know if that was her daughter, granddaughter, whatever. But they were both just as nice to me as they could be. And they sat me down at the table, put a plate in front of me, some nice food, the same thing they were serving inside, but I think they gave me more than I would have gotten inside. And I don't even remember if they charged me. You know, I don't even remember if they may have, but it was a great meal. The only thing about it is I did feel humiliated because I couldn't eat with the people up front. But that's the way it was. Anyway, that even that spirit of kindness that was displayed by that white lady up front by sending me around and telling the black folks in the back to take care of me. I feel that still exists, but I feel we kind of beginning to lose all of that. And you know, I'll say this, and I'm going to turn over to our next guest, Brother Warren. But I want to welcome everybody, Shake Don, Cannon Bay, my sister-in-law, Stephanie, and all of you who are listening to the internet. I want to welcome you before I go any further and tell you that if you do want to come on and start taking this conversation, call 657-383-0671. We'd love to hear your comment and your opinion. But as I wrap this up and turn it over to Brother Warren, I'll just say I don't know what the term Make America Great Again really means. I got my ideas, and I'll tell you what I think it means. But to me, to be great is to be good, to be noble, to be honest, to be generous, to be compassionate, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I don't know if America has, on the whole, ever been like that when it comes to the treatment of black folks and American Indians and Chinese folks, even poor Europeans. When people came from Eastern Europe or they came from Italy, they did not get treated compassionately. They had to fight
their
way. Well,
what are you talking about? People to people or government to people? It wasn't federal laws. It was people to people. You remember when we used to eat dinner when you was at home? Everybody came to the kitchen table. Each individual didn't get their plate and run to their room and lock the door like you see today.
Yeah.
When I used
to
sit down at the kitchen table, that was a great time in my life with my family.
I see what you mean. But let me just break back in and say this.
Mm-hmm.
In that case, I definitely see what you mean. It was a lot better then. But I wasn't talking about the government. I was just talking about the society. You know, the way a lot of white folks treated black people, it wasn't about any government making them tell black people, like, for example, just let me give one example, then I'm going to turn it over to Brother Warren. I remember as a young fella, I probably wasn't any more than 11, 12 years old, and I was walking downtown in Tuskegee, Alabama, minding my business, walking from one store to the next, and the sidewalk was big enough where two people could walk on the sidewalk at the same time, okay, and with a little space left over. And so I'm walking on the sidewalk. I had enough sense when I saw somebody coming in the opposite direction to make sure that he had enough room to pass. But this white man was coming towards me, and I gave him room to pass, and then he stopped me and he says, "Don't you know when a white man comes on the sidewalk, you need to get off of the sidewalk, just get all the way off the sidewalk to let him pass." Now, that had nothing to do with the government. That was just in
those,
the society.
Those are the individuals.
I know.
But before you give it to Warren, can I tell you one more thing? It's going to be real.
Go ahead.
Less than a second. I remember we was playing ball, and I seen this white man and woman walking past on the other side. You know, I see him walking down toward where we live. So it was hot that day. So me and one of my players on my team, we all left and we went home. I went home, he was with me, we walked in the kitchen, and there was the white male and his wife sitting at the kitchen table, and they was eating. My grandfather called them in and said, "Come on and have a meal." And we got our water, didn't pay no attention to it, and went back out and started playing. So here he is, my grandfather's a black person. He had offered this white male and his wife to come in and have something to eat. Then they left and went on by their journey. So people experience things. Human beings are human beings. And we only always seem likely to tell the bad side of the story. I'm sorry for holding up the next speaker, but I just wanted to get that out.
Well, we appreciate that, Mr. Pianchi. That does add some more color, if you will. Not intended a pun, since we seem to be talking about the color issue, but we appreciate you. But we'll go ahead and pass the mic on to Brother Warren. Brother Warren, what do you think about all of this, about this topic about America losing its character?
Well, I think that, in my opinion, when white people use the expression "make America great again," they want to return back to that day when you can say and do to black people what that white man told you on that sidewalk. I grew up in the 60s. I was born in 58, so I'm 62. I was raised in the 60s, early 70s, and I lived in a black neighborhood. It was a black suburban. It was one of those neighborhoods that they built in the 50s for middle-class black families, where you had, you know, your people were school teachers, worked for the postal service, whatnot. My father was a longshoreman, and he also did plastering work because a lot of his family members were tradesmen and craftsmen and stuff. And in the center of our neighborhood was a golf course, a Bartholomew Golf Course, in Southern University at New Orleans, which is the New Orleans branch of the Baton Rouge campus, is in that neighborhood. And so the neighborhood in front of ours was called Gentilly Woods, and then the main thoroughfare was in front of there. We couldn't walk to the main thoroughfare without getting into fights with the white boys and stuff. That was almost a daily occurrence, getting into fights with white boys, because they would always try to attack you. Why? Because their parents taught them. Those are the N-words. Okay, that was their culture. That wasn't individuals. That was their culture. That was their group collective view towards black people and how to treat black people. We used to go to California every summer for vacation. Most of all New Orleanians and Louisiana people got kin people in California. We go to Oakland, in San Francisco, and L.A. There were certain places we couldn't, you know, filling stations, we really couldn't go to use the bathroom. We had to pull off on the side of the road. My father knew people going along Interstate 10 that he knew relatives or friends to stop by the house sometimes. I remember one time my mother was pregnant and we were going to get a motel to spend the night. And I remember the laws, all the laws and all this kind of stuff were no longer on the books. But the attitudes were still there. You can't legislate the attitudes. So we were going to get a room to spend the night. And the white guy said he couldn't rent a room because what the other people going to say? And then after a little while, he looked at my mother, I guess, and saw and kind of felt sorry. So, I mean, you know, so I'm familiar with these attitudes. I experienced this. The example that Pianchi gave about his grandfather, that was black people have always had hospitable and open arms to other people, including white people. We cook for white people. We cook their food in their houses, okay? But now, was your grandfather a guest at the white people's house, sitting in the kitchen? I mean, that's another issue. So about the topic, America has always been a transforming social environment. Thomas Jefferson also said in his notes on Virginia, he said, as it relates to slavery, he says, we have the wolf by the ears. We could neither hold him nor let him go. The scales of justice is on one side and self-preservation on the other. What he was saying, Mr. Washington, was this. Now, we got these black people in slavery. And if God had to judge us, it wouldn't look good for us and hold these people in slavery. But boy, are we doing so good in this slavery. If we let this slavery go, we may not be able to prosper. It may be the end of us. And I'm pretty much paraphrasing what he said in that quote. So the character changes as a result of the nature of life. Okay, you have technological innovations. You have more freedoms, women in particular. At one time, women couldn't get credit. They had to get their husband permission and all this kind of stuff. And so as people experience more liberal freedom, rather, open, things change, okay? And you have influences that gets into the home from the innovations of television, telephone, you know, so on and so forth. That affects people's relationships with each other. We've got cell phones and social media. People don't even necessarily really interact with each other face-to-face too much anymore. It changes things, all right? I grew up in a home where we sat at the table. We had dinner time every day at 6:15. We had dinner time every day. We had to come to the table, so on and so forth. But, you know, the outside forces of life changes things, the nature of work. I remember one time Sundays, everything was closed on Sunday. Remember that? supermarket that was closed on Sunday. And so people worked on Sundays more so than they did back when I was coming up, you see. So things change. The character of America, and by the way, this is an influence you find globally. This is happening to people becoming more individualistic as a result of technological innovation, changes in culture, and so on and so forth. So, I just say it's just what it is. You know what I'm saying? It is what it is. Things change. People become impacted by that change. The nature of people relate to each other change. And we talked about this one time, not on here. You know, when we were coming up, you didn't question adults. We look at it as a good thing, right? But guess what? How many children got severely molested by adults and didn't tell on the adult and didn't speak out because of the power of you don't talk back to an adult, so on and so forth. So a lot of things that we look at that were good may not have necessarily been all that good. People don't want their children to get whipped the way we got whipped. I mean, people drop their kid off at their sister's house, at their mother's house. They don't want to see their children. They don't want to see their mom or their sister whip their children the way we got whipped coming up as a kid. I remember a situation where my brother, little boy, did something, and my brother was going to whoop him. So my mother looked at him with little puppy face eyes and said, you really going to whoop him? My brother said, well, dog, you whooped us for the same thing. You, my mother, with our grandchild. So I'm just saying, things change. People change. And then those of us who live at a certain time feel like, you know, hey, what's happening? So to answer your question, the theme of your show, I don't know. I don't know whether America lost its character. Character is always evolving. It's like an individual. Sometimes individuals change.
Brother Warren, that's a wonderful answer. I like that answer. And I'll tell you something, and I'm going to turn it over to Sheikh John Kenan Bay. I believe that's John Bay next, and then Sister Stephanie. But, you know, I remember the good times, even though I lived in a segregated world. But, you know, where I live, outside of town, we had some homes just as nice or even better than the white folks section of town, because we had all the people up at the College of Tuskegee that had been trained, very well trained, to build fine homes. And they built the neighbor, Booker T. Washington, one of his visions when he went to Tuskegee. It was just like some, what I would say, plantation property. And he built with, you know, the help of people that were trained in the trades. He built not only that beautiful campus of Tuskegee Institute, but he built that whole neighborhood around the campus so the faculty would have nice homes to live in. And so our neighborhood was comparable to, or maybe in some cases even nicer than white folks. So we didn't really, at least I didn't mind segregation, because we had everything. We had an indoor swimming pool up at the campus at Tuskegee Institute. The white folks didn't have an indoor swimming pool. Yes, we could not go to their outdoor pool, but they, because of their own laws, couldn't come to our indoor pool. So we could swim 365 days a year, because we could swim during the wintertime because the pool was heated. Whereas their pool, you could only swim when the weather was nice, and mostly in the spring and the summertime or early fall. But, you know, we had it pretty good. But I don't want to take over and keep our brother Sheikh John Kenan Bay from talking, but I still want to say one more thing. You know, one of my favorite presidents, and a lot of people that grew up during the 80s during Reaganomics probably did not like Ronald Reagan, didn't like him at all. But I like Ronald Reagan. I really like Ronald Reagan. And I tell you the reason why. First of all, he always played a good guy in the movies when he was playing in those big cowboy movies. He always played a guy that stood for what was right, kind of like the Roy Rogers type of character. And the other thing was that around the late 50s, the General Motors Company, no, not General Motors, General Electric Company, the one that made appliances,
they hired him to be their spokesman. And so on, I think it was on Sunday night, might have been Saturday night, they had a program that he was the host called the General Electric Theater. And they would always have, it was about a half an hour show or something like that, but they would always have some nice, show, what I would say, like a, they call it soap opera, but it wasn't no color soap opera like you have Love Story. So it was a black and white story, and it was something good, always a good moral would come out of it. And Ronald Reagan would be the host. And I never will forget, he used to start and end the program by saying, "Progress is our most important product," because General Motors was advertising their electrical appliances, but he always said, "Progress is our most important product." And I like that. You know, I like that a lot. And then later, he became a politician. Later, he became the governor of California. The only thing I did not like that he did, to be honest with you, is I was a student at the University of California, Berkeley, and the Black Power movement was in full bloom. I was involved in the Black Power movement. My friends were all involved in it. And so we started protesting on the campus. My group was not sitting in the administration building like some colleges. We were just marching around in a circle in front of the administration building. But a lot of white people joined in, and they started getting, you know, kind of boisterous and rowdy and threatening to do things. And so Ronald Reagan brought in the National Guard, the state police, and they started attacking the students. And then one day I was in the library, and I came out, and Ronald Reagan had ordered the state police to use their helicopter, one of their helicopters, to drop tear gas on the students. And I didn't like that. But I wasn't over there where that happened. I could see it from the library where I was, and I went in another direction and went home. But other than that, Ronald Reagan was one of my heroes, and mainly because I was in the Navy when he became the president. And he was inaugurated January 20, 1981. And I was in the Navy. My wife and I were stationed in the West Indies. And Ronald Reagan gave a 12% pay raise to the whole military. Everybody in the military pay went up really well because of that 12% raise. And I like that. But I'm just saying that back when I was a child and he was doing that show, it wasn't good for a lot of people. Negroes were still getting lynched. But the spirit, going back to what Ms. Bianchi was saying a little while ago, the spirit was a good, wholesome spirit. Yes. Folks sat down with their families to eat dinner. You know, people even went to church on Sunday together. Families went to church. A lot of that seems to have drifted away. But let me go ahead and turn it over now to Brother Sheikh John Kennebay. Sheikh John Kennebay, what do you think about this topic?
First of all, I'd like to say good evening to everyone. And as I listen to the conversation, it looks like we have accepted norms that are long ways away from natural or even human, wherein we don't see or treat each other as humans. It looks like one class of people want to be treated as human, and they treat their brothers and sisters as if they're inhuman. And that hasn't changed. The principles of love, truth, peace, freedom, and justice are being a long ways from being understood and practiced. The closest I would say that idealistic is what the Christian church preaches but not practice, and what they expect would be what a government would be like when Jesus, or when the prayer is answered or manifest, when we say, "Let thy kingdom come on earth as it is in heaven." And that kingdom is going to be a government set up. It's going to be a righteous government, a government where everyone is doing right. We're a long, long, long ways from that. So I see a lot of, you know, dancing, a lot of conversation about what is the way it is as opposed to where it should be. It's hard for some of us to imagine that human being, one human being would treat another human being as if he his brother. So we don't see each other as brothers and sisters under the protection and guidance of one Father. So we pray for our day, but our action is not toward making sure that day comes. What I mean by that, we're praying for a day when there's a righteous government. Everybody in the government are doing right. And this government here, the idea of it, was something to aspire to, which would be close to a righteous government we have heavenly on earth, because that the principle of this government is the highest principle of any government here on earth. But the practice is a long ways from that. Now, we have laws that have allowed this injustice to go. And when their effort to make the laws more justly, there have even been terrorists that terrorize people who express dissatisfaction being part of a government that practices unfair laws. And it causes all types of stress and pain. And the pain is such that we kind of isolate, insulate ourselves from it. And I think our parents do that to protect us, but at the same time, the pain is not carried on to the next generation. So the way some of our brothers and sisters think, and I think of the pain that their parents had, baffles me. I don't want to pick on this brother Clarence Thomas, but to me that's a perfect example. So I think that it says that you would treat your brother as you treat yourself. Do not do unto other people what you not have other people do unto you. So there are populations that do things to particularly my population that they will never have it done unto them. They rise up and resist, and they yell very, very loud. At the same time, they don't want those conditions placed on them. So it's a situation of fairness. A lot of people not being fair, and we're being trained to accept mediocrity and not understand, see clearly what is fair. We said that people born in three categories of despair. Some people born fair. They know that's their nature to be fair. There are some are trying to be fair because of their education system or what their standards, what they have been as seen and the roles of how people perform and their ideas in their head is a false idea of what is fair. And when they learn what fairness is, a lot because of your feeling when people do things to you and hurt your feelings, that give you some idea of your emotions about there's some disharmony here somewhere. So there's some people trying to be fair. And there's some wouldn't be fair if you got a 45 to the head. So, and a lot of these, I think, are the ones who are making these laws. They have no sympathy, no empathy for people who are in pain caused by these various laws that are made. And they don't feel the pain, you know. So I think there's a long ways for this nation to go. I think that it's going to take some of us to be more courageous than we are. It's more comfortable to be not challenged. The norm is like, that's the way it has been, so this is where it's going to continue. No, we got to have now, I'm a pivot just a little bit. Some of our strongest fighters have been usurped in a fight that was took you away from the fight here. What I mean by that, during the Vietnam War, it was a version that a lot of our people effort away took away from this community, our community, and it suffered when that occurred. Went and fought a tight wall that has nothing to do with making the situation better for our citizens in the United States of America, but it drained certain communities. We lost brothers in that war that when they came back, if they came back at all, they had drugs, PTSD, Agent Orange, and the families continued to disintegrate. So when you trace all this back, the fabric of what pulled like a thread out of a garment, that took place. So without clarity of what's going on, we sort of like the blame game going on. So I think that from a human perspective, one human treating another person as a human, it looks like there's no equality there. One class of people think they're better than another class of people, and they are treated like humans, but other class of people, they say they're not humans, so they should be treated like animals. So I think that we are being complacent. I just think that there's got to be some courageous people. Some courageous people get labeled in a way that they are ostracized, and their thrust of what they're trying to do, the right to community, is being ostracized as if they are not good citizens. They are bad citizens. So there's this laboring someone in a sense as being a bad citizen because they're trying to change. It's going to be the betterment for the entire society if love, truth, peace, freedom is practiced, because that's why all people pray for when they say, let thy kingdom come on earth as it is in heaven. And this is type to be a righteous kingdom. It's led by our brother Jesus, who's going to be the one that's going to rule this earth in an equitable, loving way. So I might have got a little emotion there, but my thoughts came out as I felt them, and it is what it is.
Okay, well, I want to say thank you. That was a wonderful talk. Everyone has made some wonderful comments. And as I said, I probably want to wrap up at 9 o'clock, so that's only about 8 minutes away. And so we definitely want to hear from my sister, my beloved sister-in-law, Stephanie. You've heard a lot of conversation in the last almost an hour, so you've had a lot to ponder over as you listen to our family room forum participants tonight. But before I bring you on, I do want to say this. If anyone who's listening via the internet, we've had some very intriguing points made, very good points made. So if you would like to make some points, if you're listening via the internet, just call in. We've only got about 5 minutes left according to plan, but if you call in, we'll make sure you have a chance to voice your opinion and even get feedback from the group on your opinion. The number to call in is 657-383-0671. We'll leave the line open for you to have the opportunity to make that phone call, 657-383-0671. So we hope that some of you will call in. We'd like to hear from you. So, Sister Stephanie, what do you think about what you heard about this topic this evening?
Well, hi, everyone, and thank you for having me on. Happy holidays to everyone. A lot of things was going through my head as everyone told their stories. It brought back memories for me. You know, of course, I was raised up in a military family. We were military brats, and so being in a military family, you get to experience a lot of different cultures and a lot of different people from all nationalities. So, you know, we had the normal household with everyone sitting down together at the dinner table, going to church together and things like that, playing sports and a real family life, and a lot of barbecues with different people from all nationalities. My parents had friends that was that were Filipinos and Japanese and black and white, you know, and they bring their children, and so we were, and we also went to schools that were very mixed with different nationalities and cultures. So we've been used to being around a lot of different people. Then when I got a little older, I got married and to a sailor. And I remember in the summer of 79, we traveled going to Virginia Beach. And on the way, we were going to stop in Alabama, Huntsville, because he had sisters that lived there. So in order to go to Huntsville, we had to go through Mississippi. We had AAA route us out a map. You know, we were driving. AAA routed us out a route, but it detoured. It detoured down to Mississippi, somewhere I've never been. I've seen lots of racism and stuff on television, you know, like Macon County Line, some old racist movie. But now the detour took us into a very small town, and that's when the car started messing up, sputtering. So we pulled over at this little greasy gas station. This great big fat white man wearing farmer jeans, he comes over, and he had a helper. His helper was a boy about 16. He was big and fat, wearing farmer jeans too. So we told him, my husband told him, we need gas, fill it up with gas, and find out what's wrong with the car. So this man goes up under the engine, and he's shaking everything violently. I said, what are you doing? And he said, I'm trying to figure out what's wrong with your car. So this was a big 460 engine, and so it had a giant air filter. He took that air filter out, and he said, this here's your problem, this here air filter. And he handed it to the boy and told the boy, throw it in the trash. And the boy said, ain't nothing wrong with this air filter. It can be clipped. It's got a few bugs in it. And he nudged the boy real hard. Throw it in the trash. I said, that air filter ain't no good. I'm going to sell him another one. So he goes into his shop, and I followed him. Get up on the wall. He don't have an air filter in our size because it was a really big air filter. And so he gets this little tiny air filter. Looked like he'd go on a motorcycle. We didn't know nothing about cars. When something go wrong with the car, we put it in the shop, back to the dealership. So I said, what are you going to do with that? He said, I'm going to put it on your car. I said, no, you're not. And he said, yeah, because that's another problem. You had the wrong side of the air filter. So you're supposed to have this tighter air filter, and that way air can circulate around it. And so I didn't know nothing about a car, and neither did my husband. So we let him put this little tiny air filter on there, and he says, another thing, oh, I had looked at the price of the air filter was $12, $6. But when he charged us everything, he said $12 for the air filter. I said, no, the price on the wall said $6. He said, oh, you can't pay no never mind to none of these hair prices. See, because everything done doubled. I said, double when? When we pulled up with black faces with California license plates? So he said, double for the gas, double for the air filter, and anything else we got was double. So, oh, I was so angry. And then my son, he was like 5 years old. He said, Mom, I'm hungry. Can we get something to eat? So I noticed there was a little restaurant next door. Had an old regular screen door and everything. I take my son in there, and it was kind of packed. And everybody in there stopped eating and start staring at us. I walked on up to the counter. There was a white woman at the counter. And she just wouldn't acknowledge us, and she continued wiping it. And after a minute or so, I didn't want anything to eat out of here. I just wanted to see how long it was going to take for her to acknowledge our presence. So another white woman came on in, came up to the counter, and that's when she looked up and said, may I help you? I said, what about helping us? You saw us standing here. And I just kind of went a little bit belligerent. I was young and hot-headed, and I looked at all the people that were staring, and I said, what y'all staring at? This ain't Macon County Line. Nobody scared of you white folks up in here. won't let me eat out your nasty restaurant anyway. You never spit in my food. I told my son, come on, this place too nasty for us to eat out of. So we leave. Get up the road, car still sputtering. I told my husband, take it back. He going to fix this. He done charged us. My husband said, no, we'll go somewhere else. I said, no, we will not. You take it back. So we go back. And this man says, well, I tell you what, I got a cousin named Charlie. Now, he can come out here. Going to cost you $60 for him to come out. That ain't no guarantee that he going to fix nothing. That's his fee for coming out. Now, if it's you want to guarantee, tell you what you do. Call a cab, and there's a hotel about 2 miles up the road. Check in there for a week and leave your car here. Guaranteed when you get back, your car will be fixed. And I just lost it at that point. Had 357 Magnum up under the seat, and I got it. Took it and pointed at his sat behind, and I told him, here's the guarantee. Guarantee I'll blow you all the way to the back of Mississippi. Know who you think we are? And he, hold on, gal, hold on. Ain't no calling, pulling no guns. But, you know, I was a youngster. I was hot-headed, and I would have shot him. You know, but my ex-husband wrestled a gun from me. We went on and left. It was, and we went to the next place. It was a water pump. So, you know, we've all experienced some horrible experiences sometime in life forever being a black person in the United States, you know. And so I don't see anything about their greatness that they're talking about when we were being treated like that. And worse. So, you know, I think as the years go on, things have gotten a lot better. I've gone to churches where I was the only black, you know, because of my neighborhood and being a neighborhood church and been treated so lovingly, you know. But it's just always been something for black people that's uncalled for experiences in the United States. And I'm just hoping things are getting better over the years. You know, people are being raised different for sure. And I'm hoping people are still having their children sit down at the dinner table together. They don't have as much respect for adults like we used to, and there's still a lot of racism out there, but there's a lot of kindness, too. So we just have to, like Michael Jackson said, look at the man in the mirror and do our part of being kind to the next person and treat people like we would want to be treated. And everyone have a happy holiday. Thank you. God bless everyone. Hello?
I really appreciate that.
Yeah, we're still here.
I thought my phone died.
Hold on just a minute. Can y'all hear me, Stephanie?
I can hear you.
Well, I just want to say thank you. You tell the most interesting stories, and I know that had to be a harrowing experience and so forth and all that. But I'll tell you, I love to hear your stories, and I would like to end on that note, but I do want to say this last thing, and then I'm going to turn it over to my co-host, Ms. Bianchi, for closing out the show. But I want to tell my quick little story because it kind of puts a different twist on things. You know, Alabama, like most southern cities or towns, had an active Ku Klux Klan. Clavern or whatever you want to call it, you know. And I was trying to find the name of this town outside of Birmingham. Starts with a C. Well, I can't remember it off the top of my head, but
It was one of the towns that had a bad reputation for the Klan. It's outside of Birmingham. It starts with a C, I believe.
Is it Coleman? Coleman?
Yeah, that's right. Say that again.
Coleman, that's north. That's north. Coleman, Alabama. I've been through that before. Yeah.
Coleman. C-U-L-M-A-N, I think. But anyway, yeah. Well, let me just tell my little quick story. Because this is a little different than Stephanie's story. Now I'm going to turn it over to Ms. Bianca to close us out. We'll go around one more time, though, before I do that. But let me tell my little Coleman story. So I had a used car that I had bought down in Florida that ran really well. And I was going to go down to visit, up, or however you want, over to visit. My mother lived in Atlanta. It was like about a couple of hours drive from Huntsville, where I was living. My wife and I were living. I was stationed in the Navy. We were living on the Army base out there in Huntsville. So I decided to take the car to get the oil change. And the car had been running very well. You know, that car was a really good car. It was a Buick, and I used to drive Buicks mostly. Now I drive Chrysler. But that Buick was really nice, comfortable, and I loved it, and my wife loved it. And so I took it to this place that I had normally been taking my car to get a service, told them to change the oil. And then when I picked it up, I felt I was ready to make the trip. So the next morning, my wife didn't go with me that particular time. I just wanted to go down and see my mother for a few hours, maybe spend the night, and come back the next day. And I got down there with no problem. Next morning, I got up and got ready to leave. It was like really early in the morning. And I passed by. As a matter of fact, I stopped at this filling station near my mother's house to get some gas. And there was this big stack of cans of oil next to the pump. And I thought about it. I said, you know, maybe you need to check your oil and see if you need to put some oil in. But I had just got my oil changed, so I know they charged me for filling up, you know, with new oil, you know, and you know, however many cans of oil they put in there was supposed to be full. And so I said, no, I don't need to get any oil. I don't need to check. That was a bad mistake. Anyway, I drove on, and I got up there past Birmingham. I got right outside of Carbon, Alabama. Now, I had heard, ever since I can remember when I was a teenager, I'd heard about the Klan being bad up in Carbon. I heard, but they were bad up in Carbon. And so that was one place I did not want to have to go down into. But what happened is that I threw a rod because the Pearson that had changed my oil had left the little thing to, you know, keep the oil from flowing out. They forgot to tighten it up or put it back in there right. And my oil had, on my way down to Atlanta, my oil had drained out. So I left Atlanta with almost no oil at all in my car. And the time I got up there by Carmen, it had drained all the way out. And so my engine froze up because I threw a rod. And, you know, I was able to creep. I was able to creep down in the Carmen because I was right there by the Carmen exit. So I'm thinking, oh, my God, it's Sunday morning. I don't want trouble with white folks. I just want to get home to my wife and my son and not have any problem. But here I am down here in Carbon, and I'm expecting the worst. But you know what? That was one of the most, what I would say, revealing and satisfying experiences I've had in my life with white folks. I've had some real good experiences and some not so good experiences. But I got down in Carbon. As soon as I got off of the interstate, I-20, and rode down in there. There was this filling station right there at the exit down there. And I went in there, and Stephanie, your story kind of reminds me of these people. I don't know if they had Farmer John jeans on, but I went in there, and there was like three of them sitting in this small circle. And I went in there and said, what can we do for you? I said, I need to get my car. I need to get up to Huntsville. Huntsville was 80 miles away. So I need somebody to tow me up to Huntsville because I was going to take the car back to the people that changed my oil, and we were going to get that straight. They ended up putting a new, maybe a rebuild, but they put another engine in there that was really stronger than the one that I had, which that worked out okay. But the thing about it, I need to get back home, and I needed a tow. So the guy said, similar to something you had said, but it was a little bit different. He said, well, wait for a little while. You can stay right here. You can wait inside if you want to. You can wait in your car, whatever. And you know, my cousin, I'm just going to say his name was Jimmy. I don't know. It could have been Charlie or Billy. But, you know, he said, my cousin Jimmy had to take the tow truck down the road, but he'll be back in a little while. And I get him to tow you to Huntsville. He got back, and he said, yeah, I'll take you up there. It'll be $80. I had $80. Fortunately, I had $80. You know, I kept a little money saved at the time. And so I said, okay. And he said, well, come on, sit up in the cab with me, because, you know, I wasn't going to sit in the car, because you know how they have it kind of like drawn up from the hood, those old-fashioned tow trucks. And so I sat in the hood. And we didn't really talk too much at all, but he was, you know, he wasn't acting all hostile and everything. He was being a business person, you know, being perfectly, what I would say, gentlemanly, if you want to use that term, cordial. And got there, and my money was in the house. I went, I got the money, paid him, and he took off. And I said, wow, that was really a strange experience, because here I'm thinking that I may have to run down the road and find somebody to save me, or, you know, whatever, because I couldn't drive the car because the car wasn't running. But, no, it turned out all right. So it's always a surprise when you're dealing with those white folks. And I can say truthfully that I've had some bad experiences. Klan killed one of my very best friends when I was in college. We won't talk about that tonight. But, yet that particular experience turned out to be a good one. So the question I'll end with, and I'll turn it over to Ms. Bianchi, but I'll give everybody else a chance to make a closing comment, is America losing its character? Put it like this. Personally, I think America is trying to find its character. You know, it's like somebody say, you know, I was over at your house the other day, and I put my address book. I was getting ready to call one of my friends. And I put my address down somewhere. I think it was on the table where the phone is, but I'm not sure. But I was in Billy's bedroom because I was going to call from in there, but maybe it's not. I don't know where my phone is, but I got to find it. And I think America's trying to find its true character. I think the character was designed to be good. I think even during the days of slavery, a lot of those founding fathers, like Brother Warren had said, they didn't really like slavery. They didn't want slavery. A lot of them didn't even want to whip their slaves. But they were put in a position where they had to keep that discipline up to get the crop in, and they did what they felt they had to do. Thomas Jefferson said he didn't really like slavery, even though he had any slaves. So I think America wants to be better. Even the people who are the Proud Boys, you know, I think these are a bunch of anarchists. I think they're a bunch of crazy white folks. But you know, if you talk to some of them one-on-one, they will tell you that they really believe preaching that somebody did something to steal the election from their guy. And because they've been sold that idea and they believe in it, they believe that only if their guy is the leader of America will America really be the country that they feel they can be safe and happy in. I don't agree with that, but, you know, we got all kinds, and it takes all kinds, they say, to make the world. I personally would like to see it go back to the way it was when I was a child, with the exception of those racist segregation laws. Because, you know, black people, be honest with you, even with the police, and I'm not going to go on a rant, and I'm not going to give a lecture, but I feel that in most cases, not all, most cases, we were treated a lot better back in those days, because if you hadn't broke the law or sassed the police, they basically treat you with respect. I mean, I remember a time when myself and four other guys, we were in high school, we had gone out of town about 40 miles up the road to go to a party. The guy who was driving, we was only about 15, 16, 14 years old. He must have been speeding or maybe ran a stop sign or something like that. And the police stopped us and made us all get out the car, didn't make us lay on the ground like they do now, told us to sit on the curb side of the road, on the side of the road, while he ran my friend's license. And, you know, the thing about it is, that he let us go. Wasn't nobody getting shot. Nobody was getting intimidated. He just did his job. And, you know, he wasn't disrespectful. He didn't call us the N-word or anything like that. This was in Alabama. Alabama, Montgomery, Alabama police. So there were some good days and bad days. And I guess it may always going to be that way. I don't know. But Ms. Bianchi, before I bring you on, would anybody else like to make a closing comment before we wrap up?
I want to say something on the topic about the character. What I will say is that American character was one where it did embrace scientific innovation, exploration. I think all Americans have always been excited about innovation in the sciences and medicine. But what we've seen over the last 8 months, nine months, we've seen the leadership under this president that has encouraged a mocking of medicine, mocking of science. I grew up on the Beverly Hillbillies, and we just thought it was funny at the naivete of the Clampets. But it seems as though that the president has energized the Clampets in this country and made that some sort of American way to dismiss doctors, dismiss science, dismiss innovation, dismiss the observations of some of the most well-trained physicians in the world regarding a pandemic, to be like the Beverly Hillbillies and to be suspicious of learning and suspicious of, I think that's where America has lost its way under this pandemic.
Well, that's a good point. You know, you talk about the classes and the Beverly Hillbillies. You know, I grew up around those kind of people, and I won't go into a lot of detail because I want to go ahead and wrap up and pass it on. But you know, the thing about it, a lot of those people, they will buy whatever the demagogue, the politician is selling them, because they always looking for a hero, somebody to make them feel good about themselves. Huey Long down in Louisiana, you know, he had a lot of those kind of people, the big kingfish, they call him. You're buying a lot of stuff that he's selling because he made those country folks that lived down there by the creek in the swamp feel good about themselves. And, of course, Brother Juan, you probably know somebody's his history. But the fact of the matter is that I think they say Donald Trump, he never held political office, but he's probably one of the most masterful politicians I've seen in my life, because he has been able to galvanize all those kind of people, what we would call the left out, have not, don't believe they can have anymore. Then the little shack in the back, and he's made them feel good about themselves. So, you know, he needs to be at least given a lot of credit for being able to move those people. I just wish that he would move them in a more positive direction. But I'm going to move on with that. And so, Brother Sheikh John Kennedy, would you like to make a closing comment?
Yes, just one. You mentioned the word demagogue, and I listened to a program talking about Joe McCarthy, who was a demagogue. So we've been here before. It's just that Donald Trump has taken it to another level. Excuse me. So it's the demagoguery of that has permeated in the culture, and I think it has set back the culture for a moment. But I'm glad you mentioned that word. Maybe a lot of people have not focus on a demagogue, don't know what a demagogue is, but it comes under that philosophy.
Okay, Sheikh John Kennedy, thank you. We can pick this up again the next time, but we're going to be wrapping up. So, Sister Stephanie, would you like to make a closing comment?
Yeah, real quick, I would like to say I agree that Donald Trump did bring up a lot of strife that was kind of calming down in this country, with his division and his support, major support for the KKK and stuff, you know, but because there still was a lot of people like that before Donald Trump came along, but he just added fuel to the fire. And one example of that, you know, we lived in North Carolina for 3 years up in the Greater Smoky Mountains
beautiful home, beautiful neighborhood, but it was all white neighborhood. And our neighbors were all very kind to us, and that's where I went to the white church, where I was the only black person in there. When I started going to that church, it was crowded, packed. You couldn't hardly find a seat in the pew. After I had been there a couple of months, half of the church left. But I didn't look at it like that. I looked at it like half of them stayed, and they were very kind. And the preacher of the church, he said, well, I guess we didn't need them anyway. They're supposed to be Christians. So they left on their own. They didn't want to sit in the church where a black person sat. So we just continued on serving God and praising God and fellowshipping and helping the different communities. And so we just do our part. I believe in live and let live. Happy holidays, everyone. Thank you.
Thank you, Stephanie. And since Mr. P, I'm going to have the last word, I do want to wish everyone happy holidays. Be safe out there. They've been advised not to be doing traveling. Sometimes you just have to travel. So if you have to travel, be very careful to maintain all the precautions so you won't get in an accident. A lot of these roads are going to be bad in the next few days. They're bad now, and some of them are going to get worse. So be careful, but certainly be careful about the COVID because it's always going to be a threat until the vaccination gets massively distributed. And even then, the scientists are saying still continue to wear your mask and social distance until the thing calms down. Hopefully it won't be too long from now. So with that said, I want to wish everybody a safe and happy holidays, COVID-free holidays. And now I'll turn it over to my co-host for the wrap up and the close out. Mr. Pianchi, I'm turning it over to you.
Well, like you said, you're talking about the president. Donald Trump is the best president I've seen. The policies that he put forth, excellent policies. You know, I'm in the state of Louisiana right now. The state of Louisiana depends on chemicals, oil, and gas. And Joe Biden has said what he's going to do to that, and he demonstrated by appointing a Secretary of Energy that hates, so I heard, those three industries. So it'd be interesting to see what happens if he takes office. And you know, you talk about human behavior. I can show you a leasehold agreement where it's in the leasehold agreement with some land that a black person owns, and I'm not gonna reveal too much, but it says no whites allowed. So human beings do things, and I mean that's just the way it is. You have to go through life and try to maneuver your way in one way or the other. Hey, I was in Robinson, Missouri, right there close to McDonnell Douglas and not too far down from the Ford plant in Hazelwood, which is not there no more. And I was young, and we drove through Robinson, Missouri as a black community. And they stopped the car and they started pulling people out. One guy next to me, named was James, they pulled him out and started beating him. And I was standing outside watching all this. A guy walked up next to me, one of the black men that lived there in Robinson. So I first